Okay, the morning show here on East Coast FM, and Sean Dukas here, he's joint editor of Science Spin. He's going to talk about the brain. And the reason we're having a conversation about this is because of this new movie that's out called Limitless. And the premise of it is that there's a guy who can take a tablet and use his whole brain. As long as the tablets, of course, are there and he continues to take them. And then when he doesn't take them, he goes back to his old 10% again. So it's very unsatisfactory and maybe does his head in at the end of the day. Anyway, prompted by that, Sean is going to tell us all about the brain today. You're very welcome, Sean.
Good morning, Declan. Thanks for having me.
Okay, now the brain.
Yeah.
Is it true that we only use 10% of its capacity?
I think this is a little bit of a myth. But the problem when talking about the brain is that we don't actually know that very much yet about the brain. Like, for example, the big thing about the brain is consciousness. Like, both of us are talking here. We know we're aware that we exist and we're conscious. And, you know, we know, for example, unlike other animals, that at some point we're going to die and all of those things. But why is that? Like, what makes us conscious? We don't know that basic information. So really, I should premise anything we say is that a lot of what we talk about with the brain still, in terms of the scientists, is really beyond us. But definitely there are areas of our brain that aren't used as much as other areas of the brain. And I think this has a lot to do with how we evolved as a species. There's a thing in science and in psychology, they call it the slits of perception. And I think that's relevant here. And really what I'm talking about there is that there's lots of information out there in the world. If we think just in terms of what we can see, there's a visible spectrum, but there's other light. There's UV light and there's ultraviolet light. We can't see that. We see in certain spectrum. The same goes for sound, that we can't hear certain sounds a dog can hear. So there's all this the sensory information out there that we don't tune into, because really what scientists believe is that in the old days, when we're out trying to get food on the savannah or wherever we were, the early humans, we only needed a certain amount of
information. So we didn't need to develop those. Like if you could see the radio on which you're listening to this, you would see lights and all that sort of coming out of it, because radio waves are in colour.
Yes.
And as you move stations, which I hope you're not going to do, the colours would actually change.
Yes.
And in sound, as when the mini disc was that they could act the music spectrum, the sound spectrum that was there, so you wouldn't actually notice because you didn't discern them. So they could make the mini disc smaller and leave out all the stuff you never heard in the first place.
Absolutely.
But we do unconsciously know we're missing it.
Yes. Well, the other thing about the brain is, okay, if we accept the premise that there's a lot of our brain, whether it's 80% or 90% that we're not actively using. The brain, they now believe, is plastic. And what I mean by plastic is that it responds to behaviour, things that we do. Like, for example, if we're trying to learn the piano, then our brain is responding to the notes that we're learning, and it's laying down memories and it's adjusting, and we're getting more tuned into that. So certain areas of our brain are being used and activated that might have been dormant. And there's lots of other things the same, whether it's an athlete who's trying to jump over a bar or run faster or whatever. So, you know, this plasticity, it depends on how we lead our lives, basically, or what we do in our job or etc. But certainly we can tap into some of these abilities, if you like. You see, for example, with the famous drug LSD in the 1960s, you know, people said that they would expand their mind and they would take LSD. Well, really, what happened there is that the slits of perception that I was talking about, the normal channels that we look at the world, when you take LSD, it's essentially, it opens up a lot of sensory information that we wouldn't normally be aware of. So this is why people report things that seem bizarre, like they can hear colours and they can see sounds and things like that. So yes, we've a lot to learn. There's a lot there, and there's certain examples of people such as autistics or savants, which are high functioning autistic people, where they have these extraordinary abilities and they're very lacking in other abilities. So that seems to be some convincing evidence that yes, maybe there are some abilities there in us that we're not actually tapping into.
Or maybe it's developing them, because you said about this being a plastic brain. We're talking about potential, aren't we?
We're talking about potential, absolutely. Like, it's incredible. We all know the story of Rain Man, but not so long ago I watched a program about a boy on TV. He was a 12-year-old boy, and he's English, actually, and they brought him up in a helicopter. Now, this boy has a lot of problems with his social skills, interacting with other human beings. Now, of course, that's very important, and, you know, that's going to impair him, obviously, in life. But he has this amazing ability that they brought him up in a helicopter, and they brought him over central London. And he just looked, and that's all he was doing, just looking out the window. And then they brought him down, and maybe half an hour later, they gave him a pencil and a huge piece of paper. And he was able to recreate the entire city of London in incredible detail, just from memory. Now, that is phenomenal.
Yes, but was he any good at knowing things he wasn't interested in? Like, say if he hated chocolate, for example, just say that he probably liked chocolate, but if he opened up a box of sweets, would you remember where all of them are? If he wasn't interested in chocolate, was he predisposed to having interest in London? I mean, put in the context of somebody who was hopeless at school and couldn't actually learn any poetry or prose or maths or anything, but they could recite to you everybody who played in an FA Cup final from 1923 and in what minute they scored and all this sort of stuff.
Yes.
It was the thing that interested them was the thing that they actually knew
That's
most
right.
and absorbed like a sponge.
Well, maybe a lot of us, this is a bit of speculation, but maybe what we do is we filter information, you know, like we hear of people having selective hearing, you know, that maybe you take on board the information that you feel is important. But in cases like this, obviously, this is exceptional that, you know, we wouldn't see that ability to redraw London like that would be important for our daily lives. But here's an example. There's a lot we don't understand. I mean, for example, you mentioned people that can remember things. I remember somebody when I was growing up, and he could remember every single footballer and hurler in any All-Ireland final going back to 1900. He would name the players, he'd name the teams, he'd name the score, and he would also tell you which individual scored, and he'd always be right. But he was considered a bit of an oddity in the town I grew up in, you know. But he had this amazing ability, so he must have...
He only had to hear it once because it fitted into the things he was interested in.
Yes, exactly. Maybe that's it. Now, in terms of not using the brain, getting back to that 80%, 90% that we don't use, well, really, I think that's a little bit of a myth, because with the latest scanning techniques, there's all kinds of studies going on, for example, where they're scanning people that have various mental illnesses, where they might have depression or schizophrenia or whatever, and they're subjecting them to various stimuli. They're showing them pictures or bits of text to try and figure out what does each area of the brain do, and various areas will light up in response to various emotional pictures, for example, you know, whereas other people, it won't light up at all. So maybe they're psychopaths or something like that. So they're slowly getting to realise that the brain is there's no areas of the brain that is just dead tissue that's just sitting there doing
but
nothing.
But it could be operating at a different level, because this is where things like sixth sense come in, or people who maybe have an idea of the future, or things like deja vu and coincidence and all those things. Even, you know, the philosophy of religious belief could even be hidden away in the 80 or 90% because we don't actually know.
Absolutely.
Do we, what goes on in the brain on another level that we're not conscious of.
But we're thinking now and we're talking to each other, but scientists have no clue what that really is. Like, what's happening in our brains now that we can actually think, and I'm sitting talking to Declan, you're talking to me, we're having this conversation, we're aware that we're here in the studio in Bray. I mean, they can break it down into chemicals and, you know, we think that this is going on, that cells are communicating in such a way, but really, they're at the very, very earliest stages of that. You know, so we've a long way to go.
So what are the life forces? Because if somebody is dying, there's the same collection of cells there just before they die than after they die.
Yeah.
So what is the life force? What is the discernible...
Yeah,
thing.
Well, say with near death experiences, they've done studies where, you know, people think that they're going down a tunnel, etc. And there's a difference of opinion there. Like, some scientists believe that these experiences are based on certain toxins being released at the time of death. So the brain is actually poisoning itself, or it's being deprived of oxygen and it's causing these hallucinations, Whereas other scientists, because they don't really know, they believe that maybe there's something more than that. Maybe there is a life force, because we can't rule it out. There's so much we don't know that's the essence of the person. I mean, you know, sadly, if you've ever seen somebody, a relative dying, I have, you know, they seem to change very, very quickly after they die. You know, now that's just an anecdotal story where you suddenly feel that they're not there anymore. They were there a second ago, now they're gone. Now, that's all I can say from my own experience.
Yeah.
But maybe that is the life force kind of actually leaving them, you know. But getting back to, say things that we don't understand, you mentioned, how people have these extraordinary abilities in terms of, let's say, people like seers, they're called, S-E-E-R-S. Now, these are people that can actually see into the future, or the CIA, now this is documented, and the FBI pay certain people money when they're really stuck in a case. Let's say they have no clue about a particular case. They can give them information about the case. They can give them maybe a piece of clothing or whatever to do with the victim, if that's available, and ask them certain questions like, where did this happen? Where did that happen? Where's the murder weapon? Now, these people come up with answers. Mm. Murder weapons have been found. I mean, and that's extraordinary. You might find it in the middle of nowhere in a field. How did that happen? And you know, they just seem to have some kind of ability that we don't fully understand. So I'm not going to rule it out. Like a lot of, say, the scientific press regarded the film as you know, this is not scientific and this couldn't happen. And, you know, we know so much, but really, no, we don't actually. So it's a very good concept for a film, and although there isn't a drug, they mention a drug in there called NZT, I think it's called in the film. There's nothing like that out there at the moment. The closest thing we have to it is caffeine and nicotine, which is going to keep you going.
Yeah.
And I suppose amphetamines, which is called speed, that's going to keep you going too. But as in the film, there's a price to be paid, because you're going to crash after the use of that. But for a period of time, it'll keep you really on your toes.
Right. And you hone behaviour based on your needs. And that's what you were saying about the way of evolution was in all that.
In terms of, say, the compensation effect, I don't know if you want to mention that. It's an interesting one, where you might have, say, somebody who's deaf or somebody who's blind, and they develop the other senses to a greater or lesser degree. I think that's true, but I think that's behavioural, really. That, you know, if you were deprived of your eyesight, then you have to develop your other senses to a greater extent.
I'm not saying however, survival and procreation are probably the two biggest motivators.
Absolutely.
So that would be part of the survival mechanism, that if one sense is gone, the others compensate.
That's right. That's right. You know. And they're exactly like, if there was one part of our brain that we don't use a lot and it was essential to our survival that we did use it, whether that was greater athletic ability, which isn't as important anymore because we all sit in front of computers and in offices these days. But if that was really, really important, or some other ability, then obviously that would be stimulated in our brain.
All right, just one last thing, and to do with Alzheimer's and things like that, which is a physical illness that affects our mental capacity. It's the building on, the building on. The more you use your brain, is it? The more you build on layers and layers, like an onion.
That's right.
Of your brain. And then when and if you get something like Alzheimer's that tries to disintegrate that, if you've got more added on from all the stimulation you were doing, the less impact it has, or the longer it takes to actually interfere with your
well, with Alzheimer's, you lay down memories. Like, it's a physical laying down of a memory. Like, if you have an experience, they now believe that the brain is plastic, but it will actually physically lay down in some way. It will lay down a memory in your brain, and that'll be there. And you know, you may have trouble recalling it, but it is there. Now, with Alzheimer's, unfortunately, it's a physical attack on the brain, and what happens is that these little tombstones, as they're called, they actually are little holes in the brain. It ends up just punching holes in the brain, so that the normal connections between the brain get broken down. you know. And the brain tries to re-establish new connections around these tombstones, as they're called, to try and keep the whole thing going. But of course, as the disease progresses to a certain point, that's not possible. So that's why it gets worse. Now, they do have drugs that have actually not, they're not available yet, but they've been found to actually halt Alzheimer's. But the problem is, by the time Alzheimer's starts to show symptoms, the person is already in serious trouble. So what we need now, the next stage for scientists, is to get a diagnosis. So let's say in your 40s, like I'm in my 40s now, if you were able to say in your 40s you've got a danger of Alzheimer's and it's starting to develop now, then maybe you could be given the drug before it actually starts to cause damage. So that's where we're at.
Okay, well, that's been very interesting. Yeah. Sean Duke, joint editor of Science Spin magazine, available for free on the net at sciencespin.com, or you can buy it as a hard copy magazine in the newsagents. And it just goes to prove that the potential of a brain is limitless of where we came in.
Absolutely. Thanks, Declan. Thanks
very much. Thank you very much indeed, Sean. Good to see you as always.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.